Welcome to the MS News Today podcast. I'm your host, Jen Powell, and I also have secondary progressive multiple sclerosis. I am a columnist with MS News Today at multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. Thank you all for listening to this podcast. Let me invite you to join our MS forums. We have over 1,000 active members discussing common themes and sharing their experience on living with multiple sclerosis. Please consider joining. You can find the link to the MS News Today forums in this episode's description. Welcome to the MS News Today podcast. I'm your host, Jen Powell. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with psychologist Dr. Gail Lewis. Hello, Dr. Lewis. How are you today?
Hi, Jen. I'm very well, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for accepting our invitation. Dr. Lewis, you are a multidisciplinary psychotherapist. How did you become involved with multiple sclerosis?
Actually, it's a very serendipitous experience. Years ago, I was trying to find ways to grow my practice. And one of the ways that I was doing it was sending out mailings, including my CV, a card, and a letter describing how I believe that these mailings were to doctors. How I believe that bodily symptoms can often be indications of psychological issues. And I believe very strongly in a mind-body connection. So at this particular time, I had narrowed down this outreach to neurologists. And one neurologist out of many that I reached out to asked to meet with me. And I thought I was very responsible of him, because if he's going to refer patients to me, then he should meet with me. And so I was very glad to do so. And his name is Joseph Herbert, and unfortunately he passed away several years ago. A remarkable human being and someone who made an indelible mark in the field of multiple sclerosis. And when I met with him, we spoke about my experience working with multiple sclerosis. And at that point, I believe I had one person in my private practice who had multiple sclerosis. And after 5 minutes of talking, he offered me a job to work as a psychologist in his comprehensive MS care center, to which I responded, I did not know this was a job interview. And he said, I didn't know either, but I think you'd make a great fit here. So after a lot of bureaucratic paperwork and interviews with people at NYU's Langone Medical Center, I was credentialed there to be an assistant professor of neurology in their MS care center. And pretty much he gave me a lot of leeway to have a mini private practice in his MS care center to work with MS patients. And very unusually, he believed in long-term psychological care. And I say unusually because most hospital settings do not approve of that. Most insurance companies do not approve of that. And I am a psychoanalyst by training, and I do work from a long-term treatment model. And I do believe, because multiple sclerosis is a chronic illness, it is a long-term treatment. A long-term treatment model, I believe, is required to work with people who have MS because of the changes that can occur, symptom eruptions, having exacerbations, changes in diagnosis, changes in lifestyle, et cetera. And he was incredibly welcoming and supportive of that, as was his staff. So I had the ability to work there for 10 years. And while I was there, I became an MS care specialist, and I became an MS partner in care for the National MS Society. So that's how it all began.
What an auspicious beginning. Congratulations to
thank you
being welcomed and making such a remarkable beginning turn into a career helping those with multiple sclerosis.
Thank you. I feel very fortunate. I owe so much to Dr. Herbert. He really was an extraordinary human being and such a great support and proponent for what I could offer to his patients. And I will always be grateful to him.
I think in speaking about long-term care, that is so necessary for a disease that has a progressive aspect to it that's chronic, where we are consistently grieving losses and encountering emotional challenges. And to have a more longitudinal model of mental health care is integral to our ability to succeed. With when dealing with those with multiple sclerosis, what more prevalent emotional challenges do you encounter?
I think that there are several. I think that initially it's about dealing with often the shock of what it means to have a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. I think, you know, part of the shock could be that the person has never heard of multiple sclerosis, or I find more usually people's association with multiple sclerosis tends to be a more dire association. They typically view the association as someone in a wheelchair and not as someone who can be living with a chronic disease, a progressive disease, but one that also can be manageable and can allow someone to live a full life. So I think that's one significant feeling state that I find, particularly at the beginning. Also during times of shifts in the disease progression, or when someone is having exacerbation, that feeling of shock can emerge again. Sometimes because people dissociate psychologically from their awareness of having their disease, both out of need to not pay so much attention to it in order for them to function in their lives, because they don't want to pay attention to it because they recognize that it could take over so much of their emotional state and so much of how they move in their world. And because they just unconsciously need to not know that they have their disease. We all have defense mechanisms that allow us to just keep moving and to not pay attention to every single bit of stimuli that affects us. And that could be very constructive, but it can also be very disturbing when we have someone who has MS who then has an exacerbation and they're caught off guard. They're not mentally prepared to know how to deal with it at the time. So that shock will reemerge. I also find that there's a lot of depression and anxiety. And, you know, 50% of people with MS, at least 50% of people with MS, have undiagnosed depression. And I find that to be something that I focus on pretty immediately when I work with patients. I want to know all about what their relationship is with depression. Did they have depression prior to a diagnosis? Did the diagnosis in some way exacerbate their experience of depression? How they're feeling their depression? Is it purely involved in their thoughts? Are they feeling it in their body? Where in their body are they feeling it? How is it affecting them? How is it affecting their relationships? How is it affecting all aspects of their life? And are they being treated for it? One of the reasons that it's undiagnosed, as much as it is because neurologists have these days, and for quite some time, do not have that much time in their consultation space to be asking as many questions as I do believe need to be asked to a patient who's coming in for a visit. And because of insurance, because of managed care, usually a visit is 15 to 20 minutes. And often a lot of questions get bypassed as a result. And one of them is about one's mental health. And I think that it needs to be made more important in those visits, because I think it's so easily treatable. It's so easily treatable by medication, by a referral to a psychologist, by a mental health worker, by being in some kind of support group. So I find that that is one of the most difficult issues for people to contend with, because not only are they not being asked about it, but often people feel a lot of shame around feeling depressed and feeling anxious for reasons that may have nothing to do with having an MS diagnosis, but for reasons about their pre-existing pride. I shouldn't be someone who feels depressed. I shouldn't be someone who feels anxious. I shouldn't be someone who's affected by this. And that that can cause a lot of reluctance in acknowledging to somebody who can be of help to them that they are suffering. Additionally, I think that there is a lot of grief. There's a lot of ongoing grief about the loss of what was in one's life, the loss of one's anticipation of what their life could have been, having to, for some people, constantly re-regulate to new normals and make adjustments to what a life with a disease that is unpredictable would mean for them to have to, I guess, abide by in some way. And does that mean having to always be at the ready and always be prepared? And the problems in how that might interfere in one's life and focusing on it so much? Or coming to terms with, okay, this is my life with MS. How can I get to know it better so that I can feel more in control of it? So there are so many different emotional components to it. Additionally, I think that it can be so challenging when, as social beings, we are always interacting with other people. And let's just say someone with MS doesn't really want to know what their MS is about. It's going to make it very difficult for the people around them to know what their MS is about. And I do believe that someone is better off becoming very well acquainted with how their MS functions. And therefore, they're better at being able to explain to their support people and to all of the people that are around them that are also affected by their MS, what their MS looks like and what it might mean, and what, for example, fatigue might mean, and what their inability to do one thing one day and be able to do it the next day, and what the differential is between those days. So I think that it can cause so many different emotional disruptions internally, relationally, socially. So I believe it's a constant battle that doesn't necessarily have to be a battle, but people often feel that it is because of all of the ongoing negotiations that they need to make in their emotional world.
You bring up so many excellent points. I'd like to go back to a diagnosis. When you go to a neurologist, you do just go through the checklist of your physical self and pertaining to the physicality of multiple sclerosis. And so often the confluence of emotional health is not part of that comprehensive diagnosis or diagnostic checklist. And it's so imperative. I look back to my own diagnosis and how helpful that would have been to be able to not only identify the depressive factor, but how that might look, change, and be from where I was prior to diagnosis to where I was then, and be able to better establish that with my family. Because so often the effects of this disease on our emotional health, they do bleed over into those in our lives, which brings me to how challenging this can be on a couple. I can only imagine you've had extensive experience with that. And I have, as being married for 25 years, it's been a capitulation. How does this affect a couple?
I think it can affect a couple in a variety of ways. One of the elements of my practice that I have always, always incorporated into the way that I work is when I'm working with an individual, said person with MS, is that I always invite their main support partner into the treatment, both along, in a session with the person who has MS and also alone, because I do believe very strongly that the support person is affected incredibly severely at times by their person with MS and by the diagnosis and by what ripple effects the diagnosis has on their relationship, on their communication experience, on the different issues of responsibility that tend to shift as a result of someone being diagnosed with MS. And I don't believe that support people are given enough attention and enough respect, generally speaking, to have a space to be able to talk about what their experience is like freely. And part of that has to do with, and I found that a lot of support partners feel guilty for having feelings about any of the changes that their dyadic system is going through, because they feel that the issue is more to be focused on the person with MS and the challenges they're having, and to negate their own feeling experience about it. So they feel uncomfortable even saying that, yes, I have feelings about this. Yes, this is affecting me. Yes, I feel angry at times. Yes, I feel resentful that I am now saddled with more responsibility, that I might have to take a second job because my person with MS can no longer work, that I can no longer do the social things that I used to be able to do because I feel like I can't leave my person alone for fear that something problematic is going to happen if I'm not there. And what comes with all of that are a lot of feelings of, for example, resentment and sadness and their own grief for not just what their partner is going through, but their own grief about losses in their life as a result of this diagnosis. And what I find can make it easier and has more promise to make those challenges more addressable is if there is ongoing open communication, like with any couple, when there's an elephant in the room and they're not talking about it. When things get talked about, it's more likely that solutions can be found about how they can work together to address these issues. And it means being honest. And that can be so challenging, I find, with the support people, to feel like it's okay to be honest that they resent their person with MS, for example. That they resent the burdens that they now have to hold on to. And for the person with MS to be able to be compassionate about that too. That the person with MS can have the capacity to be other-centered when, in fact, when a person has MS, it means that they, in many respects for self-care, need to be very self-centered. And they might not realize that in so doing and in so needing other people to help with their care, that the person most important to them is in turn not being cared for and not being attended to in a way that they need. So I think that multiple sclerosis in a couple doesn't have to be a make or break situation. Often it is. I have worked with patients who, as a result of the complications of the MS and their communication challenges, that the relationship could not withstand any of it, and the couples would dissolve their marriage. I've also seen a lot of couples who are extraordinarily strong and extraordinarily supportive of each other and do whatever they can once they become alert to how the other person is truly feeling, once that honesty is really spoken about, which can be so difficult to do and can feel so threatening to do and frightening to do, that once they do it and trust the solidity of the relationship in order to do it, so much good can come between the two of them to be able to not just maintain, but grow their relationship with the other occupant, that being multiple sclerosis.
I often say multiple sclerosis is the third person in a marriage. It's the affair. And in my own marriage, I've had to make room for understanding and giving my husband permission to say he's resentful. He didn't sign up for this. That doesn't mean he doesn't love me. But that means he didn't sign up for this. It's hard. And
you didn't sign up for this either.
No. And being able to hold those things can be a tricky thing. It's a dance. And it's something that we definitely go through every day. I think just being open to the changes is something that I've learned is, you know, very helpful, just being open, because things change, our feelings change. It's a very fluid situation. I've noticed you are board certified in conducting telepsychology sessions.
I am.
And I have to imagine with this pandemic, what a huge, amazing opportunity that is for people who need help. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, interestingly, I started my training to become a board certified telebehavioral health specialist prior to the pandemic, specifically because I wanted to start this other arm of my practice. that is solely focused on offering telebehavioral mental health care to people with MS. Specifically, it was for non-ambulatory MS patients who couldn't easily get access to a therapist's office, and to people with MS who lived in rural communities for whom psychological services are not readily available. That was my initial reason for going for this particular board certification. And then the pandemic hit. So it was serendipitously very useful to have this credential during this time, because there are a lot of different rules and regulations and HIPAA concerns when you're doing telemental health. So I feel very fortunate and grounded in having that knowledge and having that credential to support the kind of work that I do, whether it's MS related or just due to the fact that my practice right now and has been for many months completely online.
And how helpful that must be, because in this pandemic with COVID-19, I know it has lent a specific kind of difficulty, and there are different kind of challenges for the MS community, both those who are ambulatory and non-ambulatory, with lowered immune systems and the inability to go to physical appointments, as well as conduct our life as social beings. Yes. It has been quite a challenge, and sometimes the depression and anxiety has been heightened. Can you elaborate on that and how that has maybe shown up with those you treat?
Yes, and in fact, that has been something that I have observed, that the people with whom I have worked with some time who have MS, who I've continued working with through the pandemic via a Zoom vehicle primarily, the lack of social connection, the terror, I was going to say fear, but I think it amplifies to a level of terror about going outside and even doing what the CDC had recommended initially about being masked and doing one's best to keep distance from other people, that didn't even seem to feel safe for a lot of the people I work with who have MS. So they became very reclusive in their homes, and reclusive and in a state of terror all the time, which, can you imagine psychologically what that could be like? The terror is physically and mentally a drain on one's entire functioning, and it can feed upon itself. So therefore, it can make it even more difficult when things have gotten better to feel like one can get out of that space of feeling that scared about being a more, I guess, social being in a way that had been what was more comfortable and we took for granted before. So I found that depression levels in my MS patients have increased significantly. The level of anxiety has increased significantly. Issues of trust and feeling that one can be in the world in a social way, or just in a way that feels freeing. I mean, one of the issues that I'm sure you understand that comes with MS is in utter loss of control over one's body and what this disease is going to do to it. And that brings with it a feeling of a loss of freedom. Because when you don't have control over your body, when you don't have control over what it's going to do, it makes it hard to feel that sense and connection with feeling free with what you can do and what you want to do and what your body can do. So when you add on that a pandemic that has taken away in such an extraordinary way our feelings of being able to freely move and to freely exist and to feel that we can trust both ourselves and the people around us, it has been, I think, such an extraordinary problematic time for people with MS. In general, I think people in our world right now are trying to negotiate what it means to feel that other people are not dangerous to us anymore and that we are not dangerous to them. And when you have somebody with MS who is dealing with, well, how do these vaccines affect me? And how do I deal with what several studies now have been saying, that if you're on a particular medication that's very immunosuppressive, then the vaccine might not be as efficacious as if you weren't on such a medication. So while the CDC is saying that we now can move freely, first of all, I have to readjust to what that actually means, because we've been living for 18 or 19 months with the idea that we can't move freely and that we're dangerous to each other. So I have to first negotiate, do I want to feel like I can be outside? Can I really trust being around other people? Or are other people going to feel like I'm not dangerous to them? And then there's the issue that I just mentioned. How do you know that you're getting these vaccines and that if you're on an immunosuppressive medication that might not be responding as well to the vaccines, what do you do with that? And I think that it's making people feel with MS feel even more trapped, because they're seeing other people being able to go out and start socializing again and start doing the things that we used to be able to do more freely. And they still feel trapped and they still feel really frightened and really overwhelmed. And my concern is that there's going to be a very long-term impact of feeling socially terrified, not just for people with MS, but for many people in general. Because again, we have been trained in this past 18 or 19 months that we are all unsafe to each other.
And as someone actually who's on a specific DMT, who that has been questioned as to whether the vaccine has efficacy with, mm-hmm. I can relate to what you're mentioning. And it can add another layer to loss and to grief and to feeling like, okay, another thing, no control, and add on to just a feeling of the loss of control and what next and where to begin again. This is a whole new reality for us. So I completely empathize with what you are mentioning, just regrouping and finding out what is safe and perhaps shifting our perception to meet reality, whatever that looks like. I think it's important to seek professional help if you're having trouble doing that, because it's okay that you're having trouble doing that. It's natural, and it's important that you seek guidance to get through that.
I agree, and I have urged my patients, as well as on my social media platforms, I've recommended that. It was right after the CDC said that we all can go around mask-free, that before anybody with MS does so, that they should contact their neurologist or their MS care team to find out what is recommended to them so that they're doing so safely. And I think that it would be important for all of us to reassess at any time and to not be ashamed that we have to continually reassess what safe feels for us, and that it can change from moment to moment and day to day. And what might feel safe for you to do today might not feel safe for you to do tomorrow. And that's okay. That's okay. I think that self-care and constantly checking in with yourself about that does not have to be a shameful experience, does not have to be something that you feel badly about doing. It should be something that you can look to as an empowering experience. I need to check in with myself today because I want to be and feel the best way that I can. And for example, if today going outside is not something that's going to make me feel okay, that's good that I know that. That's important that I know that.
That's a wonderful tip for emotional wellness. And I appreciate that, Dr. Lewis. Dr. Lewis, how can our listeners find out more about you and your telepsychology and all that you have to offer? Where can they find you?
Well, the best place to find me is on my website, which is mstelotherapy.com. And on the website, there's contact information. My email address is on there. My office phone number is on there. There are links to be able to contact me. And there's a slew of information about who I am, what my credentials are, what my experience has been working with the MS community, and what it is that I am trying to accomplish in having established this particular arm of my practice. As I mentioned, I have been working with people with MS for quite some time, but I wanted to extend my services to people who, again, are initially it was about non-ambulatory patients and people living in rural areas. And one of the things that I had done as a result of wanting to extend my services, and I not only got the telebehavioral board certification, but I also became a board certified psychoanalyst. I am a psychoanalyst, but this is a credential that enables me to do many things, one of which is to treat patients outside of New York, where I'm licensed. So on the website, there's a very long list of states in which I can practice, in which I can deliver telehealth. So it's not just narrowed to a New York population. And I'm so pleased that I'm able to do that so that I can reach more people. And I do want to clarify something, because I'm finding that when people go on my website and they reach out to me, there's a great concern about my fee structure. And I feel that hearing it in my voice can hopefully make people feel more calm about understanding what it is that I'm doing. So I do not accept private insurance or Medicaid and Medicare. And that statement usually makes people run. The point of this particular business practice is not about making money. It's not about me making a profit. Yes, I have bills to pay. Yes, I have responsibilities. I did this because I wanted to make sure I can reach as many people with MS who want to talk about what it's like to have MS as possible. So I work with people so that while there is a fee, it's a very flexible and very, my aim is to make it as manageable as possible for the person who is reaching out to me. And while I am not at liberty to say what the scale of my fee is, I promise anybody who's listening that my aim is to work with you. My aim is to make it possible. And you don't know me, so you don't know to trust me, but I'm asking that you have some faith that what I'm saying is 100% true. I want to be of help. That's why I did this. That has been the most important driving factor in me establishing the telepsychology practice, is that I felt that there was a need. I feel like there's a large population in the MS world that is not being psychologically taken care of. And while I'm just one person, I want to be able to be of help to as many people as I can. And that is why I'm doing that. So I thank you so much for allowing me this platform to be able to say that. But I really wanted to make sure that I emphasize that to whoever is listening to this, that I want to help you. I want to help you if you would give me the privilege of allowing me to do so.
Well, thank you, Dr. Lewis. I can't think of anything better than to have an additional resource to our listeners, and especially during this time when so many people are having anxiety over our current state of affairs. I appreciate that. We will certainly have links to Dr. Lewis's website and how to contact her in our description of the podcast. And as we close, what would you like to leave our listeners with?
What I'd like to leave you with is that I want you to know that you're not alone, that there are many resources. I know that in the last interview that you did, Jen, was with Megan Beyer, who is a colleague and friend of mine, and she mentioned CanDo MS. And that's how I know her. I used to work with her at CanDo MS. And I want to emphasize, as she did, that it's an incredible resource for people. And it's an example of what I'm saying, is that you're not alone. There are so many resources, either through CanDo MS or the MS Society or the National MS Association, MS Views and News, all organizations that are trying to provide patients and their family members with educational and professional feedback about helping people live with a diagnosis of MS. So the resources are there. It's up to you to reach out and find them. And if that is the only purpose that I can serve for you, to help direct you to any of those resources, that is a great reason to contact me. I'd be more than happy to do that. So there are people who want to help you. Obviously, Jen Powell being one of them, and I like to consider myself another one. But there are so many more people in our country, in our community, that is solid and strong in wanting to offer any kind of assistance that you need. It is out there.
Well, thank you, Dr. Lewis, and it's been such a pleasure speaking with you today.
It's been equally a pleasure for me. Thank you so much again for the opportunity to be able to speak about this.
And thank you to all of our listeners today. This is the Multiple Sclerosis News Today podcast. I'm your host, Jen Powell. Share your thoughts on this episode through social media. You can find MS News Today on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Follow us to keep updated on the latest news and to never miss new content and initiatives. Click the links in this episode's description.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to Multiple Sclerosis News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com.